I'd like to think you are too. This isn't a stick to beat God's people with, let me promise you that. There are so many people out there. We've got so much to do. So much seems unmoved and untouched. And there are moments, not often, sadly, moments when it just breaks my heart. And I'm feeling something of that tonight for some no particular reason, just a culmination of things in God's providence, I suppose. I'm thinking of Christ. I'm thinking of Christ and all that he's done, all he promised to do and did do and is doing, and his giving of his Spirit to us so liberally, and his word, and entrusting the gospel, which is described as the power of God unto salvation to those that believe, into our care and into our keeping. Not for our own sakes. We have these assurances. And he's put his people in all manner of places, in all manner of times around the world, that we should make a difference. Truly make a difference. And the cultures and the communities in which we're all placed are all different and always have been. He knew that. He foresaw this from the beginning. In our reading, we saw Paul in the synagogue, Paul in the marketplace, Paul in the Areopagus, which is, I suppose, like the university forum. Everywhere, in each situation of life, the gospel is profoundly disturbing and comforting and powerful. We look around the world and you see there are people who have the same book, the same Bible, the same profession of faith, speaking different languages in different times and expressing their cultures in different ways, in part of different cultures all around the world. And we'd be tempted almost to distance ourselves from each other because the way that they are expressing, the expressions they're finding for their faith seem so radically different from the way that we do here in North Bradley. Some services go on for hours. Some are full of ecstatic music. There's such a variety that you could be tempted to think that they believe a different book because the expressions of church are so radically different. But we're brothers. We're the same. But each one is finding what they must do. When I was with the Jews, I became as a Jew. When I was with the Greeks, I became as a Greek. Each one is finding the answer, how Christ would minister to their place, their time. I don't know what you think of the world out there, but we were talking about it on Tuesday night, and I think our judgments about it all will vary a great deal about how far you see the extent of God's goodness. You know, some people, they look out the window, and their whole preoccupation is how God is manifest in nature, the glory of God as creator. And they look out and it's all so positive and they have such a positive view of it all. And human beings are so remarkable, so wonderfully and fearfully made. And our technological powers are so extraordinary and our intellects and all these things. And they look at the world and they just go, can't you see the hand of God in all these things? Isn't it amazing? God has clearly made all these things. And you get others who would tell you that the whore Babylon begins the moment you step out the front door of the chapel. There's nothing but darkness and depravity and sin and wickedness and lies and idolatry from this point on. And we talked together, we prayed about this a little bit, didn't we, the other night? Our relationship to this world, how we're engaging with the world outside our front door. And we were saying to me that basically your judgments of the culture around us, your views of the judgment around us, it's almost like mixed. It was 50-50. It was like for every one positive cultural experience you have, there was another one that was negative. You were sort of telling me that for every offensive television program that you see when you turn on the television program, there was another that you found edifying and encouraging. For every corrupt politician, there was the excellence of our legal system and so on. There were these, you saw the whole thing quite balanced. 50-50. But that still tells me that even in that charitable view that many of you have, half of everything you experience in life troubles or disturbs you. Some things greatly, grievously trouble you. Half of your whole experience in life is either mildly or grossly disturbing to your Christian sensibilities. Got so much to do. 50-50 is not a kind of place of settling, is it? Are we content with 50-50? Maybe that's just the way it is, and we should just not worry about it too much. That's just life. That's just life. Or maybe when Jesus said we're to go and be salt and light, he meant it. Maybe we are actually supposed to make a profound difference. How are we going to do it? How are we going to do it? Because it's still, in the words of you two, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Have you? Have you found what you're looking for? Are you happy? Are you settled? Are you content? Is all well? Nothing needs to be changed? It's all good. And we can approach this in different ways. We can get out there, or we can separate yourselves and be holy, come out from amongst them, and become a very different, distinct sort of people. What are we going to do? Jesus said he's come that we might have life and have it to the full. An effusive life. Are you living an effusive, ebullient life in Christ Jesus? Is your cup running over? Are the scriptures fulfilled in your experience? Are these true for you? Or are you still hungry? Are you still thirsty? Are you hungering and thirsting after righteousness or not? Yes, we have a message of woe to proclaim to the world as well, don't we? There are things that we have to say, that have to be said. Good things and bad. But what we can't do is be silent. We can't be silent. That's not our part. That's not our place. Because it's too important, and the time is too short. It's too short. This matters too much. Look at us. Look at us. Under our tin roof, our little group. Out there in the sunshine, there's thousands of people. Thousands of people. And the thing is that they're so indebted to our God. They are so, if we're concerned about people being in debt, if there's an economic concern in the world at the moment, there is a greater debt. People are so in debt to God. You know, somebody was saying, you know, in the different translations of the Lord's Prayer, sometimes it says, forgive us our debts. People owe God their very breath. Every good and perfect thing, every good gift, truth, life, love, family. They owe it. They owe it. It's not theirs. It's a gift. It's from him. Steeped in debt. Completely, completely. You think the Greeks have got problems? There's no way they can pay. No way they can repay. They can give to charity every day between now and glory, and they won't even begin to pay off the interest. They need a bailout. and you know Jesus, who opens his hands and gives the very thing, the one and only thing that will satisfy the wrath of God and fill the gap and pay the debt and set them free. Is that our experience? Are we a free people? Are you debt free? Great to be more influential, wouldn't it? To see more people saved. Saved. Keep it simple. Because 50-50 is not a very acceptable figure in my book. It'd be great to just see that moving the other direction, wouldn't it? To see and look outside the window and turn on the radio and listen to the television and go on the internet and not be alternately slapped in the face and then soothed, but actually find countless people whose hearts broadly sympathetic, open, loving truth, loving life, loving peace. Wouldn't that be wonderful? So what are we going to do? Are we going to go out on the street corner and just tell them all they're going to hell? I know somebody did that the other, not so long ago. He's standing up in a little town that I know, standing on a box, and just everybody's going by. He's going, "You're all going to hell. You're all going to hell." You know, I'm not conscious that there's one single person that I know who is saved as a consequence of that preaching. Because I think it's just too easy to write them off. And I know that the answer either is not to stand in some palatial church ecclesiastical building with all the heads of state around us and all the infrastructure of power at our disposal embedded into the very heart of society, and tell everybody that the person who is lying there before you is without doubt going to heaven, as are you all. Both those things leave the world completely unmoved, completely untouched. Salvation does not come this way. But it is by our message. A deep, rich disclosure of the will of God to the people we're talking to the people who are actually there before us, who we know and have sympathy with and care for and are interested in and are listening to and have some understanding of, reasoning as we saw Paul doing with people into a place of quiet and settled confidence in Christ. I wish I could offer a cheaper solution, a quicker solution than rolling our sleeves up and getting involved in individual people's lives every single day and being open about our faith and living it out and starting now. Paul goes round Athens, doesn't he? Goes round the city of Athens, sussing it all out, spying it all out, noticing their ways. Do you care enough to notice the people around you? Are your eyes open? Do you know what makes them tick? Can you perceive the nature and the state of their faith and their beliefs? And can you see their idols and speak about it? A about this God who they, do you know, they just don't know. Who's more extraordinary, more wonderful, more remarkable than any image or picture or presentation of him than the world is ever going to give. If 50% of our experiences is just looking out in this world at idols of all manner, shape and description, quite a lot of stuff's got to come down. Quite a lot of stuff's got to come down. And who's going to do it? Who's going to do it? I suppose if I preach like this, it's not surprising the church isn't overrunning with thousands of people, is it? My apologies to visitors who've strayed in for this one occasion. We're going to have to be specific. We're going to have to see what needs saying and have the courage to say it. And to see what needs doing and have the courage and the love to do it. That makes the difference. That's what makes the difference. It's very easy, isn't it? We could criticize Western culture. So easily, it's permissive, it's materialistic, it's relativistic and shallow, and we can proclaim our judgments upon it all from the pulpits or over the dinner table. But don't forget that the flip side of all those things, of all that permissiveness, is the tolerance that gives us opportunity to thrive. And the flip side of all that materialism is the prosperity with which we secure our daily needs. The flip side of that relativism is actually what is quite a peaceful land and a peaceful way of life. And the flip side of the shallowness is masses of amazingly entertaining TV and music and films and the rest of it. There's so much entertainment, isn't there? But I think the thing which needs saying is this, that those things, whichever side you see it, or whether it's half full or half empty, everything's changing actually. And I think that's the thing we need to be focusing on. That if these cartoon stereotype versions of what it's like out there, we have to be careful because actually everything is changing. Have you noticed there's a feeling that the noose is slightly tightening? That certain liberties seem to be disappearing? That privacy is becoming a slightly more valuable commodity? Have you started to notice that the prosperity and the materialism is beginning to slip through people's fingers, that economic concerns are actually beginning to stalk around people's houses? Have you started to notice that the relative peaceability of our nation, underneath the quiet, there seems to be a slight boiling tension between communities? Have you noticed that despite all the entertainment and the prevalence of media access, people are bored, profoundly bored? And that boredom is anger bottled up at lives they're not able to live. They can see other people jumping off mountains with sky suits on. And they're stuck in this grotty little office in front of this little mechanical machine, watching it through a screen. They can see, but they can't touch. And people are frustrated. And all those trends are being brought to bear on our local situation, aren't they? Here in North Bradley. North Bradley. Parochial, yes? Is that fair to say? People would say. A bit parochial. A bit unresponsive. No sudden moves in North Bradley. Quite reserved, as Wiltshire people are. And people who live here. and probably not the center of world culture. But you can say all that and be critical, and at the same time you have to recognize there's still community here. And you have to recognize that there's a steady, quiet way of life here. The vestiges of a steady and quiet way of life, which is not to be sniffed at. And there is an old worldly charm that people so miss in the frenzied buzz of the modern world. There are little places you can walk around this place, and it feels like there's still some space. There's still some time. There's still some air. But North Bradley is changing too. North Bradley is changing. Talk to Kath Lawrence. She's 102, Kath Lawrence. She grew up around here. She says the love has gone. The community is collapsed or collapsing. People are coming isolated from each other, living in their own little nuclear bubbles, in their cars. People don't know their neighbours as they did. And the economic uncertainties are affecting people here too, aren't they? And the culture that pours in through the internet and the television, X Factor, all the rest of it, is a greater influence on people than anything else. And everybody's a star in EastEnders. In their head. And really, the village of North Bradley is gradually becoming, sadly, suburbanized. And all these things are concerning to people. How deeply, really happy are people, I ask you? Is there anything we can say to them? Is there anything that we can offer them? There's a man called Tozer in the 60s, and he said he could foresee the end of the vacuum. What he meant by that, let me give you an illustration. Do you remember Gerard, my friend Gerard, who came here to preach a couple of times? When the Iron Curtain came down, he went into the Czech Republic with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Thousands of people would come out onto the streets to listen to you. You put a little microphone thing up on the streets, and thousands of people would come and hear you speak. They had to hire football stadiums to get people in to come and listen to what they had to say. Eight churches were planted in 18 months. It was like a vacuum. This openness, this hunger. They had so little. There was so much space in their lives. And what they had had become was so bankrupt and broken and redundant. But he said within five years, they'd gone from two state TV stations to 13 to 32 television stations. The pornography poured in, saturation, cultural saturation poured into the Czech Republic at astronomic speed, and the move of God just ground to a standstill. Because everybody, like they are in these days, they are filled. That's the problem, you know, when the preaching of the gospel is like, come ye all you who are hungry. But everybody is absolutely full. Do you recognize that? No? You don't know people who are absolutely full, saturated with advertising and data and work pressures and family stuff, just absolutely full to the rafters? So much information, so much advertising, so many movies, so much music. Packed with options and holidays and mortgages and telephones. Absolutely, it's like a landfill site, like a cultural landfill site. And the trouble is, nobody can throw anything away because it's all precious, it's all valuable. They don't know which bits to throw away, so it's just mounting up. And it's hard to discern the value of one thing against the other. People aren't filled, they're just stuffed. And underneath that stuffing. They can't feel the reality of their spiritual need and their spiritual hunger. But it is there. It's there. And the danger is with all my preaching, and I know I speak for a long time, and you've all been extremely patient over the years, that all this talk just is more stuff that just gets spewed out onto the landfill site. Just more data, more information that just gets poured out onto the landfill site. Filling up, filling up. Our Christian Facebook posts, and our Christian music, and our online sermons are just part of the whole culture of online stuff and online information, online opinions. Do people actually see? Can they perceive? Do they know that what we're saying, and this is why we're so desperate, it's life-changingly, radically different from everything and anything else they're going to come across in the whole of this world. And not just more consumables. Nicely packaged up consumables. Another idol. An idol just an unknown God. That's all. How can we tap into the real hunger for God that exists in people's souls? How can we do that? Because the truth is, there's no peace out there. There's no communion with God out there. They haven't got communion with God. Fasting. That's an interesting one. The only reason people fast nowadays is for medical reasons, because they want to lose weight. The idea that you would not take advantage of the cornucopia of offerings in the supermarkets for a period of a couple of days because you wanted to just feel and spend time with God Almighty who made you and do nothing else is not really culturally common, let's say. And even I was thinking about our meals that we held here. I was just trying to think what other groups of people would meet, all these very different people from different walks of life and different professions and backgrounds and ages, that all meet together and have this meal together once a month. And it's not just like sitting in a pub where everybody's just basically eating the same food in the same place, but they're all strangers and they don't know each other. They might be friendly. But there's something, there's a communion there. Unless I'm being romantic, that's how I see it. That's how I see it. I think our little meals are actually quite remarkable. Spending time in prayer is remarkable. Nobody sees you. You're just talking to God. There's no product. You can't tell everybody about it, because as soon as you start telling everybody how long you've been praying, the benefits and the blessings are gone because you've taken the glory for yourself. Secret unto God. It's the secret place. Thinking. Can people think? As soon as you've heard one idea, the next idea is presented. You watch the television and it carries along. The homiletic idea is carried. You're carried along. You can't say, stop. I want to stop there. I want to think about that. Is this true? Is this good? Is this right? The only way to do that is by reading. Remember reading? Where you can put the book down and stop and think about it. How about talking to each other? How about listening to each other? How about listening? Listening to a whole piece of music, right from the beginning, right through to the end. The whole thing. We need more than just a message. I suppose what I'm trying to say is we also need a culture of our own, a counterculture, not a subculture that just disappears under the radar, but something that we do. A response to the gospel, a response to the word of God that speaks not just about our salvation, but speaks to every area of our lives. a word that produces experience. I said on the website, you can't download communion. You can't download communion. And you can pay all the money you like, you can dress up fancy, you can do what you like, and you can kid all the world that this table is yours to enjoy, but it's between you and God. And he can't be bought, he can't be bribed, he sees, he knows it all. It is so precious. It's a gift from God. And the only way is through Christ and your living relationship with him that you can truly enjoy this table. Baptism. Getting completely immersed in water. It's not mere talk. It's an immersive experience. And when that experience is being experienced by somebody who's doing it in deep personal faith and communion with the living God, he pours out a blessing upon that soul and strengthens that person for Christian life and witness. That is just, you can't buy it in the shops. You can't buy it in the shops. Marriage. Or celibacy. In this over-sexualized world. It's a radical living out of the will of God. Death. Yep. We're all going to get one. A Christian death. To know what it is when it says, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. There's no insurance program. You can't get out of it. There's no opt-out clause. Be ready for the experience. Living it out and doing it together. Mourning, grieving, supporting, comforting together. You're the Christian community. Birth. I could go on. Conversions. A profound conversion. That's something the world just doesn't see, isn't it? I could go on. I was just finally thinking about this building and this space and even the gardens around us. You know, you members of the church, and you fellow Christians, you're very welcome amongst us, and the rest of you and anybody else who's here, we hold all these things in trust. They are us to commonly enjoy, aren't they? These gardens out here. It's quite a radical thing. We all tend our own little gardens. But are we tending the gardens we hold in common and making this a place of beauty and all the things that you love in your gardens of rest and retreat, the vision of nature? This building, we look after our own homes best as we can. When we see a cup on the floor at home, do we pick up a cup here? That's a radical thing. We hold all these things. This is ours from God. And we show ourselves to be the people of God when we hold these things in common and do the work together in common. This is when you get a movement. This is when you get a movement. And people live out the gospel together. And that's something people can join. Because you can't just join a message. But you can, by the grace of God, join a church. Can't you? And you can be saved from the world. Because there's a place that you can go. And it becomes your home. Well, I've got loads of stuff on my piece of paper. I'm going to leave there. We're going to take communion, but before we do that, I'd like us to sing something. It's another very old traditional hymn, Immortal. Think about it. Immortal, invisible, God, only wise, in light inaccessible, hid from our eyes. He's here. He's here with us. The presence and the love of God. The presence and the love of God. The world knows nothing of this. Let's sing to his glory.